Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Ha ha! Just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
Today's episode of the About Last Night podcast is brought to you by Bombas. Brad, what is Bombas?
Bombas makes socks that are comfortable and look great for whenever you need. And they come in a wide variety of options, sizes, and styles.
Yeah, it's like Tinder for feet. To get 20% off your first purchase with Bombas, visit bombas.com/ALN. We all need socks. We all have feet. And if you don't, you still probably want to buy socks for your family and friends. So go to bombas.com/ALN to get 20% off your first purchase. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast.
With me, Brad Williams.
And me, Adam Ray. This Friday, I will be headlining the Hollywood Improv in Los Angeles, California. One night only, one show only, 8 p.m. It's a big show. Going to have some special guests. 8 p.m. Hollywood Improv in Los Angeles, California. Go get your tickets at adamraycomedy.com. or improv.com. That's the Hollywood Improv. Friday, 8 p.m. Me doing an hour, baby. Come out and see me. Very pumped about that. And then next weekend, I'll be at the Pittsburgh Improv for the first time, August 8th through the 10th, at the Pittsburgh Improv in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Get your tickets at adamraycomedy.com. I've got some shows with Adam Carolla coming up. I will be at Rooster Tea Feathers in Sunnyvale, California, August 22nd through the 25th. And then September through the fall, I am booked up like crazy. So get all that tour date information and ticket info at adamraycomedy.com. Brad Williams is headlining the Brea Improv in his hometown of Fullerton, California, this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Get your tickets at bradwilliamscomedy.com. Brad Williams is headlining the Brea Improv this Friday through Sunday. Get your tickets at bradwilliamscomedy.com. And then Brad will be in Las Vegas at the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club August 8th, 9th, and 10th and 11th. So get your tickets at bradwilliamscomedy.com. Today's episode is a special one, baby. First time ALN guest. She's a musical genius, a friend of the comedy community, and you might have seen her on Jimmy Kimmel or seen her on tour with the likes of Clapton, Prince, Mick Jagger, Steven Tyler, Sting. She's performed with everybody, but she's doing her own thing, and she's got a new album out called Love Remains, which is fantastic. She played a couple tunes off the album at the end of the podcast. We're talking about the one and only Tal Wilkenfeld. Holy shit. What a voice. What a set of pipes. And what an accent. Australian, Tal is. And we get into that. Her journey to L.A., New York, the nightclub scene, gigging it, getting her chops, coming to L.A., playing with the Roots, Jeff Beck picking her up. Doing shows with, I mean, it's just the music and comedy world is so similar as far as the grind and how things happen so unexpectedly and organically. And you got to be right place, right time, and be ready to deliver. And Tal is a great example of that. And her new album, Love Remains, is available wherever you get music, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon. And again, she plays a couple of tunes at the end of this episode. So do not miss that. Follow Tal on Twitter and Instagram at Tal Wilkenfeld, TalWilkenfeld. Follow me at Adam Ray Comedy, Brad at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast, aboutlastnightpodcast.com for past and present eps, and all your ALN merch, beanies, hoodies, sweats. ShopAdamRay.com for all your Adam Ray merch. I got beanies and t-shirts and hoodies and hats and everything you fucking need. AdamRayComedy.com for my tour dates. BradWilliamsComedy.com for his tour dates. Come out and see us. She-Ra Season 2 drops Friday, August 2nd on Netflix. Check that out. My album, Read the Room, is available still on Spotify. And the full album video is now on YouTube. I had it cut together, taped on two red cameras, which is what they shoot movies on, baby. And you can watch my album, Read the Room, on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/AdamRay24. So go check that out. My full album to watch on youtube.com/AdamRay24. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Leave a 5-star rating and comment on the iTunes page. And I think that's it. A lot of great apps coming up. Make sure you are subscribed. Big announcements coming as well. Now that we've got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Tal Wilkenfeld.
Well, the weekend's over and it's time to chat about it.
It's time to chat about it.
Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down?
And so why don't you sit down and
listen to our dope podcast.
Our dope
whether
podcast.
Lunch, dinner, or breakfast.
Lunch, dinner, or breakfast.
Brad Williams and Adam Ray.
Williams and Adam Ray.
Are here for you any time of day. So
come over and treat yourself right. It's about last night. Come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night. Well, come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
There's, I'm sure people ask you though to like perform at things that you maybe not want to, right? But because of like your association to them, like have you ever had to play like a friend's birthday party or a
My friends are like super respectful.
Oh, cool.
In fact, like I think they ask me less because they know that.
Well, let me break that. Will you play my stepdad's 80th birthday?
Yeah, he's a huge fan.
Yeah.
It is interesting when because I just had a friend hit me up and say that it's his wife's birthday and he wants me to do like
roaster.
He wants me to roast her, and I'm just like
basically say everything he wants to say to her.
Yeah, like okay, all right, she's a nag. Yeah. She does this. I can't say this. I'm like, well,
yeah, this is my opinion.
Yeah, you know that if I say this, then the next time you say, hey, well, let's get together with Brad and his wife, she's gonna go, no, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
It's never gonna happen again. It's just not gonna go. But let's see. For those who are now hearing the accent, Australian, born Australia.
Yeah.
I've been doing research about you. I found out that you dropped out of high school.
I did.
Because you knew what you wanted to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or was the high school that bad?
Yeah. How was your high school experience? Were you cool? Were you popular? Did you hate it?
I feel like I was just neutral until I started playing guitar when I was 14, and then all of a sudden I was cool.
Yeah. Because I can think of maybe two musicians I knew in high school that were like good, right? And I'm assuming, did it come somewhat easy for you when you first started?
It was natural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were like your influences, or what would you start like
Hendrix? Hendrix was the one.
That's a solid go. No one's ever gonna be like, yeah, well, I think Hendrix influenced me to play guitar. No one's ever gonna look at you and be like, wrong.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you sure it wasn't Cher? what did you play like coffee shops or play at school? Would you carry it around with you like athletes would carry like basketballs and stuff? Did you have it at school before you dropped out?
Well, My mom was kind of strict, like not wanting me to like practice much.
Oh shit.
So I wasn't allowed to play much. So anytime I went to school, I'd be like sort of trying to get into a room and play, or like go to a friend's place and play.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do they have bands?
I'm just gonna go do schoolwork at my friend's place, mom.
And then not so much. And was it just like, because we talked about this before when we went up on stage for the first time and told jokes and got a laugh, we're just like, well, this is it. This is what we're doing. Did you have a moment similar to that where you strum the guitar and go, I'm gonna do this the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Dang, instantly, huh?
Yeah, like the minute I played the first chord.
What was the first chord?
Well, you know what's so funny is I've been asked that before and I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was probably like
G
something easy, like like.
Yeah.
Probably even easier, like an E minor.
Dang, yeah, just two fingers. But was it a song or did you just like...
I started writing like pretty quickly.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So
where are you pulling from?
Yeah, like you're 14.
I guess my
14.
Imagination.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I didn't listen to too much.
All right.
I loved Rage Against the Machine.
Well, sure.
Fuck.
I mean, yeah, because if you're... Yeah, if someone asked me there was this thing online on like I think it was Facebook or something, if you can see one band that's not together anymore reunite for one night, who would it be? And I was pissed because Rage wasn't on the list.
Oh man,
like I saw like, you know, like Nirvana was on the list, Queen with Freddie was on the list, but Rage wasn't there. I'm like, that's mine. If I could see one band reunite one night, OG lineup, Rage,
yeah,
I'd probably say The Who.
And you, with Keith then.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, on drums. Yeah, because you and we'll bounce around a bit, but, and we talked about this as we were walking up here, but you opened up for The Who.
Yeah.
That's so fucking crazy.
Fucking madness to
it's like
love a band.
Opening up for Chappelle, or, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a legendary night.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I sent Pete my finished album, and I said, if you ever need an opening act,
dang,
consider me in, and it actually happened.
That's madness, because the amount of people that, like, I'm sure come up to musicians, comedians, actors, whatever, and say, if you need it, you know, if you need an opening act, yeah. if you need someone to get you coffee, and then, like, the amount of times that actually comes to fruition,
yeah.
is probably in the less than 1%. I think
also because it wasn't really like a cold call, like, you know, I'd already met him, and he'd already come up to me and said that he loved my work. Like, so there was, you know, it was, there was some history.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, you know, randomly. I mean, it was still random.
Yeah.
I hadn't, like, spoken to the guy in 4 years.
Where did you originally meet him?
Backstage at a show that I was performing at.
Dang.
He was there.
Is it similar? Is the music world similar to, like, the comedy world, where it is, like, the hang is kind of important pre and post show, as far as, like, getting to know other acts and developing friendships and everything, and that can lead to, like, other gigs?
I think it's important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you're only on stage for an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you got to deal with everyone for the other 23. Oh, minus the sleep.
Well, and, like, if you're at an after party, we were just watching the new season of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee as you were walking in here.
Yeah.
My favorite line from that show is Chris Rock's episode, where he says he was at a party with all these famous celebrities and everything. He saw Jerry Seinfeld, ran across the room, grabbed him by the shoulders and said, "Comedian." Meaning, I'm comfortable with you. I can talk with you. We're two comics. Is it like that with musicians as well? Like, if there's an after party and there's all these, like, executives and some fans and some VIPs and some whatever, if you see, like, another musician, are you like, cool, we can hang out?
Yes, and I almost feel that more so with comedians.
Oh, really?
Somehow.
Yeah.
I found my home with, like, comedians.
Yeah.
Well, and because, like,
it's really interesting.
Yeah, because I first really got introduced to you when you were on Bill Burr's podcast.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
He saw me play with Jeff Beck, like, years ago.
Yeah.
We didn't meet, but then when I met, he already, like, knew of my work.
Yeah. And then were you a fan of Burr?
I checked him out straight away.
Yeah.
I only really got introduced to comedy, the art form, about a year and a half ago when I first came to the store.
That's crazy.
Like, I had a pretty sheltered upbringing. Like, I didn't really hear much music. Like, I wasn't, like, watching TV or listening to the radio or anything. It was, like, it was pretty strict. So then I, like, came to America and then started playing gigs immediately, and I was just lost in that world of playing all the time.
Sure.
And then I got introduced to the comedy world actually kind of by accident, or by, you know, unfortunate circumstances, because I had a lot of friends of mine pass away in, like, a very short amount of time. And one of my friends said, well, you should just come to the Comedy Store and have a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
It took a little bit of convincing. And as soon as I showed up there, I was like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, this is fun.
This is the best thing in the whole world.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Comedy Store truly just embodies, like, not just, like, you know, the joy that every room kind of brings, but, like, the overall just energy that's there is truly, like, uplifting.
Yeah.
And being around it, right? Especially now, more than, I'd say, about 10 years ago, where comics, it was just a little darker, you know?
I mean, I think that, like, especially for me as an outsider, it's super fun, because I get to connect with other artists.
Yes.
And yet it's intriguing because it's not the same art that I'm producing.
Right.
So it inspires me, and it inspires what I do. Like, whereas if I'm with other musicians, we're already doing music. Like, what?
Right.
You know what I mean?
No. And there's a respect there between artists. It's why I think all these actors try to become rock stars when they're on stage,
yeah.
try to tell jokes. I was watching this Netflix documentary on the Stones, and Mick Jagger has a writer that comes with him and just like writes a few lines with him for every gig, so he can have like a couple of jokes,
like to tag a song.
And when I saw them live, he did it because I saw them in Anaheim, California. He said like, "All right, so you guys are all here. How are you guys gonna get home? Are you gonna drive? Are you just gonna hop on the monorail?" You know, because and then of course I'm sitting there as a comic, like that's a horrible fucking joke. I can write you a
better
one.
Is that even a joke? He's concerned about how they're gonna get home.
He thought Disneyland. Now they all know what the monorail is. Stuff like that. But I was fascinated. Like, oh, Mick Jagger, greatest frontman showman ever, is like
telling bad jokes.
Not everyone can do this shit.
Yeah,
and it but there is sort of a mutual respect between everyone who performs, where it's like we all have a kinship where it's like we understand.
Yeah,
because I mean, for the vast majority of us, this was not what our parents probably imagined we'd be doing.
Yeah.
And at some point, we had to be like, "Hey, I know you guys were thinking, doctor, lawyer."
Yeah, what did your folks want?
That's the right.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah.
Is that what your folks were kind of?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, typical Jewish parents? Come on.
Yeah. Of course. Well, yeah. What are the Jewish Australian parents like?
Same as anywhere else.
Wait. So you had no? I'm surprised because you know American comedy is so big in Australia. Like you just.
I mean, I wasn't exposed to music. I wasn't allowed to watch TV and listen to the radio.
And no friends around you were kind of like, "Yo, have you heard or seen this?"
Well, this was pre iPhone.
Pre YouTube.
So, I mean, we had the internet, of course.
Yeah, sure.
We just were into hanging. Mm-hmm. I miss those days.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Sound like an old woman,
The phone down and just like
just chill.
I know.
Yeah.
That's why we like doing this.
Every 5 minutes.
That's why we like doing this. Yeah. That's why we sit down and have a conversation with someone.
Have you adjusted to the the phone social media world?
I haven't been on Instagram in over a month.
Holy shit! How does that feel?
Feels great.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to get back on it. Like,
I guess.
In a couple days, really.
For promotional purposes.
I'm going to be on Kimmel on Monday, so I have a post about that. And then I have a tour coming up a few days later, like Portland and Seattle, so I'm going to post about that. But like, I took a month break. I need some time.
Hey, sometimes, I mean, I've seen them do these tests where they tell someone they're just going to have an interview with them, and they say, "Hey, put your phone down," and then they put their phone down. They start talking to them, and they're reading like their heart rates and their anxiety levels and stuff like that. And then they have someone in the other room start to text their phone, and so it starts dinging, but they can't answer it.
Yeah.
They have to stay with the interview. And then they see just these spikes of people like watching their phone ding without them being able to answer it. They still have to be, it's just fascinating where you go, "Oh wait, this shit really is getting to us."
Yeah.
Like it is really affecting our stress levels and anxiety levels and things like that.
I heard some weird thing about like kids developing like horns on the back.
I read that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that's real?
Fuck yeah. I mean, slowly.
I want to believe it.
Slowly. We're going to evolve into that.
I
think in about 400 years, the movie WALL-E is going to be more of a documentary.
Or Idiocracy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, that probably faster.
Do you have a rule when you're recording or jamming where you just have to turn the phone off and like be distraction free?
I put it in another room.
Yeah.
Smart.
Some of the other musicians I work with don't, and I find it annoying.
Sure, you're trying to have a conversation with someone, you're trying to create, and you get like a good flow going where you're like, "Okay, this is really working," all of a sudden, "Wait, hold on. There's a new cat video.
My Postmates is here."
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you started, you said your parents like wanted you to be a doctor, lawyer. Like, how did they react when you started bringing home a guitar?
My dad thought it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was concerned, like mm-hmm. I said, but I think once I like moved to America and started to like, I guess, prove myself or get gigs and show them that it was something I could do for a living, everything chilled out.
And how was that telling them, "Hey, I'm going to move to the United States"?
Yeah, I mean, off camera.
Yeah. All right, so we cut. We just talked about it. It was amazing. They were so supportive. They were all happy.
Yeah. What was your first song? Like when I went to Australia.
Waltzing Matilda.
what was it?
Waltzing Matilda. Oh, you don't know that song?
Oh, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't, but I thought that was funny.
Wow, wait, what is that song? Who's it?
There's no other comedians watching.
No, none.
Should I do my first set right now? Preparing my material.
Yes, please.
This is about two people. Is about the audience I had for my very first set. So yeah, it'd be about correct.
But I mean, like, you know, was it like, I'm trying to imagine if I were a Australian born musician, my first song would probably be about, you know, Australian toaster biscuits, because I love those.
I think it was a Green Day song, or maybe it was like, I don't remember.
But the first one you wrote.
Oh, the first one I wrote.
Yeah.
Like the contents.
You know what's really weird? The first song I wrote had a lyric in it that someone was like, that's a Bob Dylan lyric. And I was like, really?
Wow.
I'd never heard Bob Dylan, so it was really weird that there was a line that was in it.
Dang.
So I mean, don't know how that happened.
It's a good sign.
Yeah, right? It means you're on the right path.
Yeah, it means you're on your way. I mean, comics have had times where someone comes up to him and goes, hey, that's a such and such joke.
Right.
Like, that's a Bill Burr joke. And that's, if you did not steal it, that's a great compliment, because you're like, oh, cool.
Right.
I'm writing like the same things as these.
Either that,
these great
or
people.
Like it was on some fucking mug somewhere.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. And then when, because now you're obviously known for playing bass, like when did you make the switch from guitar to bass and why?
That was pretty quick. I moved to the States, I guess I was 16 playing guitar, and then within a year I was
16.
On the bass.
16?
Yeah.
16.
You got to start young to get good with that, right?
I guess.
I mean, could you
pick, I started late, really. I mean, I only picked up guitar when I was 14 for the first time.
And you moved to the United States 2 years later to be like, this is what I'm going to do for a living.
It was really quick.
Yeah.
I mean, my career sort of moved pretty quick, too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's a blessing.
Yeah, because, I mean, you hear stories about bands being together 4, 5, 6 years, 10 years until someone finally hears them, you know, the right ears get on them.
Where'd you live when you were out here?
Yeah.
I started off in Pasadena, and then I went to New York a year later. Spent like 2.5, 3 years there, and then came back and was in the Valley.
How much of a culture shock is New York from...
Not at all.
No.
No.
You like the big city?
Well, the people there, I mean, it's kind of similar to Australians, except Australians are a bit more laid back, but we're very direct.
And, yes, I
so
could attest to
that. Sort of felt like that was really natural for me.
And the music scene, obviously, like, is, I mean, second to none, I feel like, in New York, yeah?
For certain kinds of music,
yes.
It's popping.
Yeah. Well, what did you kind of...
I went there to play jazz.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then you would go to jazz clubs all night.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah,
there's so
I was
many.
Like, I want to do what Charlie Parker and Monk did.
Yeah, right.
And you're not 21, so how are you getting into the clubs?
I have my ways. Oh man.
Well,
the club owners really liked me, because I didn't drink or anything. Like, I was literally just there to like study.
Yeah.
I was obsessed.
Yeah. So they respected that. They're like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
She's just student of the game.
Yeah.
Damn. What, do you remember something you saw or a night that you had that was like one of those just like, holy shit, like, I can't believe this is my life. I can't believe I moved from Australia and I'm here and I'm getting to see this. And you get like an extra burst of inspiration.
When I first visited New York, I saw Wayne Krantz and Anthony Jackson was playing bass. And that was kind of what inspired me to move to New York, because Wayne Krantz became one of my favorite guitar players, and Anthony Jackson as well. As a bassist, like,
and for you, that was like, I want those moments. I want that.
Yeah, I want to play with those guys and learn from them and just like spend time.
Yeah, and then you had an experience where you would you call your interaction with the Allman Brothers your big break? Is that like sort of the thing that kind of got things launched?
It wasn't a big break to the world,
right?
But it was the step that got me to the next step, which was the big break,
right?
It was like my first big appearance on on stage at the Beacon Theater, and
which is amazing.
Yeah,
that's an epic venue. Yeah, that theater is unreal.
Yeah, I love that place.
So
the audience is so cool.
Did they now did they see you perform somewhere?
In a little club. I was playing like 3-4 times a night. Like, I was just playing everywhere.
Dang, you can do that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. That's New York. You just walk everywhere. Like it's the same with the comedy.
Yeah, yeah. Same with the comedy. You just you do 3-4 sets in a night,
and you enjoy. And
I mean, I suppose you could do that in L.A. too, because all the spots are pretty close.
Oh yeah, no, I had 5 the other night.
Yeah,
yeah. It's you just kind of walk into. I mean, you had set times with these different.
Well, I
groups.
Was like sitting in with different things, but then I also had actual gigs.
Yeah, so. That were solo.
No, like all just playing groups, bass with different people. But these were, they happened to see me playing my own music, which was rare. But yeah, I was playing some instrumental music. And then that, I got that recording. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved back to LA, I played that to Vinny Colaiuta, mm-hmm. who's a very well-known drummer. And he was playing with Jeff Beck. And then he got the call that they needed a new bass player for this one, like, super big gig. It was like to 40,000 people for Eric Clapton's Crossroads Festival. So then I went and auditioned, and then they booked a whole tour on it. But it was that one gig, which was just a couple weeks into me playing with Jeff, that sort of, I guess, catapulted my career, because not only was it to the 40,000 there, but there were like millions of people viewing it, and it sort of went kind of viral on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, because... And you're how old at this time? Are you still 16? Are you 18?
I was 21.
Oh, 21. So you've been playing for a while, but at the same time, still 21. That's not that's not a grizzled veteran that's been around the block a few times. But that's the thing, is you put in the hours, and like you say, you were doing 3-4 sets a night. You were going to shows, not to party, but to study.
Yeah,
and to watch people perform, and be like, okay, that's how they do it. What can I how can I learn from this? And so while you were 21, like you say, you felt like a grizzled veteran. You had put in the hours.
They give you any advice before that big show? 40,000 people? Or no, just it's any other gig?
It doesn't feel any different.
Yeah.
Playing to 40,000 people, playing to 40 people. Because actually, I'd say it's harder to play to a room of 40 than 40,000. Because there's a natural energy that comes when you put a lot of people together. And there's a momentum that you can play off of. But when you have 40 people there, you have to like sort of play to every single person.
Yeah.
Which is a different thing.
Yeah.
So I don't think one's... they're just different.
Yeah.
But I kind of... I don't know. I don't know if you guys do this too, but like... Well, no, you can't. This is why I love what you guys do. Because like you really have to connect with these individual people, whereas for a musician you can kind of zone out and just sort of do your thing on stage and interact with the other people on stage, and people are watching. But like,
oh, and you know. Yeah, well this is gonna kind of trip you out. Comedians definitely do zone out on stage.
They do.
I've gone through the motions,
right? Okay.
I've done it. But at the same time, like, I've always told people, if people who aren't musicians or comedians knew what was going on in my head while I'm up there performing in front of people, it would trip them out. I'm thinking about what I'm doing the next day. I'm thinking about I'm planning things, but then at the same time being present.
Yeah.
Like and being in the moment and watching people in the audience and seeing.
But
like,
I do want to argue that, because I think those are kind of two contrasting. Because how are you thinking of what? How are you being present?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of like a being present, but also thinking of
that's the thing,
other stuff that you're gonna do the next day.
Yeah,
because if you're not being present, is being like fully of just thinking about what's in front of you.
Yeah, and that's the thing,
so
is
to be thinking about other shit.
I don't know how. Like,
well, you're, I don't it, think it you sound, are though.
It sounds like, weird to me. There are situations.
There's those full moments, even for musicians, where I feel like where you are feeling like maybe you want to connect more. So maybe you, I don't know, you'll try to. Do you ever like want to look at someone in the crowd, or will you like talk? You know, some musicians talk in between songs, which I feel like is a way to.
Yeah.
Like for me, that's the crowd work aspect of it, where it's like, if I do feel myself disconnecting or not as engaged, that's when I will engage in that, because that just makes me focus up.
Yeah.
And brings the room together, you know? So is there a way to do that musically?
Well, not musically, but I do talk to the crowd between songs.
Yeah.
And those are some of the most fun moments, I'd say.
Well, yeah, because anything can happen in that moment.
Yeah.
Do you feel like your experience being around comedians and comedy and just
has helped
some of the big dogs laugh? Like, you're like, all right,
it's helped.
If I made Jeff Ross laugh, I think I can make 40,000 people laugh.
It's helped. Like, it's helped, yeah. I think I was already doing that, though. Like, I think I was already, like, bantering with the crowd. But, it, yeah, I don't know how to explain.
Would you plan
it.
Stuff like Jagger? Is it Jagger you said that was...
Yeah.
I've never rehearsed something to say on stage.
Right. Okay.
But, like, a lot of what I do on stage is improv.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least 70% of what I'm doing is improv. Like, meaning I have the songs and I have the lyrics.
Yeah.
And the structures, but every time I play one of my songs, I play it differently.
Oh, shit.
So there's a lot of improvisation going on, and I feel like the improvisation is what keeps me present. If I was just playing the same song the same way every night, I'd be doing that thing that you're talking about where I'm thinking about what I'm cooking for dinner that night.
Yeah. Is there times when you have, like, those super fans that will notice? You're like, hey, you did a little, you did something different on Killing Me tonight, like that you don't normally do. Like,
well, it's different every night, so no. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Okay. No, because there's like I just had an experience where some people came to literally, like, I did two shows on Saturday, and they went to both shows.
Yeah.
And they waited in line afterward, and they talked to me after the second show, and they're like, "Yeah, you did that joke a little differently tonight or in the second show." I was like, "Yeah, the situation called for it." Like, it wasn't the same thing that was happening in the first show. They were a little more rowdier, so I had to curse a little more. I had to be a little, like, I had to do something different.
Did you know they were coming back?
Yeah, they told me. They're like, "We're coming back to the late one." I'm like,
and did you tell them? Because, you know, you're obviously, like, working and prepping a new hour, so I'm sure there's not a lot of variation.
I told them, it's like, it's going to be a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Because when, like, you don't do that sometimes and they come back, and obviously, like you said, like, there will be some different, like, intonations and rhythms, maybe, but more or less at this point with what you know you're doing, you have it locked in. So it's like, if you don't tell them, then they're like, "I can't believe you pretty much did the same hour."
Right.
And you're like, "Yeah, man, I didn't just make the last night up the night before."
Yeah, sorry to pull back the curtain on the magic trick, this is stuff that we work on.
There's this weird guilt thing that happens if you repeat yourself, like especially for a musician that has a background in jazz and improvisation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, if you do the same thing twice, it's like,
you feel like cheating the system.
Yeah. It just doesn't feel authentic.
How do you fight that?
With my background in playing, like, rock and pop music, because it's the opposite with that. It's like, play the part. Play the part for the song. And so it's like those two worlds can fight with each other, and you have to sort of have them find, I believe I found a balance where it's like, I play the things that matter for the song, and at the same time I give myself enough room to improvise within that structure to where I feel like I can deliver a new, authentic, real performance every night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there ever a moment, like, with comedians where, you know, we might, you know, say something on a podcast and then that night be like, "Oh man, I kind of, like, think I wrote a little bit there. I'm going to try that out that night." Would that ever happen with you musically? Like, if you maybe, if somebody says something and you're like, "Oh shit," and you write that down for maybe a potential lyric, or you hear a melody in your head and you're like, "I'm going to try to work that into this song or this riff," or...
No, because when I go and do a gig, like, I'm playing, like, songs that have generally been released.
Right.
It's the exact opposite to you guys. Like, once you guys release something, you don't do it again.
Right. Yeah.
Like, the opposite, we don't play things until they're released.
Right. Yeah.
And most of
out.
The time.
And then once they're out, you're like, "Well, I'm going to be playing this song for the rest of my life every night. I better get used to it." You talked about working with Jeff Beck earlier. I heard him in an interview say something about you that I wanted to ask. He said that sometimes when you play with him in the band, you would sometimes correct him and correct the band and be like, "You played that wrong." And, like, and he said that everyone was totally cool with it because you were correct.
Right. Okay.
Like, would that, like, how do...
That's the young kid syndrome, right? Like, you're just like, "That's wrong."
So that's true. You would do that sometimes?
Well,
not all the time.
I guess I kind of acted like some sort of a MD at times.
Mm-hmm.
What? Musical director.
I thought it was like doctor. Okay, like Doogie Howser. Okay.
I had to punch them when they got it wrong and resuscitate them.
Yeah. But like, I mean, obviously Jeff Beck is a legend. Was there any times in your head where you're like, I think you played that wrong, but I probably shouldn't tell him?
Yeah.
No. But I like that. Maybe it's because I'm Australian. Right, I'm just really direct.
Yeah.
But it was only ever to enhance the music, I think. Like, you know, some of the, you got to remember, like, these artists have songs that they wrote 50 years ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they might not remember a part, whereas I'm just listening to the first time, so I've learned it all fresh. So it might just be something as simple as that. Like, oh, hey, remember this part that you wrote 50 years ago? We should play that, you know?
The amount of people you've played with and
your
toured
Instagram,
and
like,
toured
if you
with.
Just peruse through that, I mean, like...
It's unreal.
Brad, will you read some of those names?
Oh, this is just some, like, the aforementioned Mick Jagger, Eric Clapton, Prince, Sting, Steven Tyler, The Roots... Like, that's...
Yeah, anybody good that you fuck around with? Can you take us through some of those names and experiences? Like, obviously, Clapton did that big festival.
Yeah.
Got to meet and kick it with him, yeah?
Yeah, well, we played together at some shows as well.
What's that like to just look across...
And see who many people believe to be the fifth Beatle.
I don't know. It's just...
Because we don't get that on stage. It's like...
Right, you guys are up there alone.
We're connecting with the crowd, but I'm always so envious of that. I mean, like, I guess, you know, we get that in a way in the podcast sometimes where it's like when something funny happens and we all share it together, that's a way to get that communal sense of, like, you know, but on stage when I see, like, musicians lock eyes on a certain, like... moment, I'm like, dude, we'll never know truly what that feels like because it's just so different.
That's why I like this Jeff Ross and Dave Attell bumping mics. Cool, they get to do that.
Yes, you know? And it's great.
And they bring all these other people. Like, I've gone up there with them a few times.
Yeah.
Like, played keyboards behind them and they joke around with me. It's so fun.
Did you ever say anything that made them come?
Made them laugh.
How great was that feeling?
Like, that was like, that's the biggest achievement.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Making a comedian laugh. Jesus.
Yeah. I was walking by the side of the store watching them on stage.
Yeah.
Dave saw me and goes, Brad Williams, and then like he called me up and I'm like, oh, like I don't get nerd, like I'm because if I'm up there by myself, great, I'm in control,
I know what to do.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing. Now I'm up there with Jeff and Dave, I'm just like, oh fuck.
This was a few months ago.
Yeah, I was so insanely nervous, and they asked me like, hey, where are you going? And I said, this weekend.
You were just walking through the showroom?
Yeah, I was just walking through the showroom. I wasn't planning on going on.
Whoa.
And then they called me up, and then they said like, where are you touring this weekend? And I go, oh, I'm going to Alabama, because I was. And this was right when that law had passed, the controversial abortion law.
Yeah.
And they asked me, they go, so what about that law? Now, I haven't thought about it. I don't have a joke.
No.
I don't really do material like that. So
put
I'm like, oh, fuck. And they go, what are you going to do? And I go, oh, I'm probably going to stand outside of the clinics and be like, I made it. Like,
dude, crush, right?
Big laugh, and then they bumped the moment Dave and Jeff both like at the same time like pointed the mics towards me, like they like it made me so insanely happy.
So they bumped towards you,
and then we did a three-way bump, and then it was just like that.
Oh, you were on stage at that,
yeah.
I thought this was you still in the audience.
No, I walked up and they were asking me questions. Yeah, so you're on stage playing with them, and like you say something. Do you remember what you said? Do you remember what the situation was?
It was something about the kind of guys I like, and I don't even remember what I said, but it made them laugh.
That's amazing.
And then you got a bump.
Yeah.
How fucking good
did
that
feel? Piano. So you, how many instruments do you play?
Well.
Yeah.
Zero.
But hilarious.
Fuck you.
Humble.
You're wrong.
But also like, you know, like that. I'm sure like there's got to be some that even for you, you're like, man, I could be a better flautist. And then we hear you play and we're like, okay, like you could also tour with that right now.
Yeah, like if we throw...
I just play the rhythm section instruments, like drums, bass, guitar, keyboards, sing.
Jesus.
But that's still like...
Have you thought about putting all those on your back and going to the promenade?
One man band.
People are doing that now.
Like, they are.
Yeah.
There's a lot of looping going on.
Yeah, like there,
a lot of people online now are doing that. And it's an art form, looping.
Oh sure, I saw when I saw KT Tunstall do that live, I was like, what the like? She just sings. She's got this thing playing.
Yeah,
and she just sings
woohoo, and then like hits a button, and then that repeats that loops itself.
Yeah,
she pounds on like a guitar case and makes a drum beat.
Reggie Watts does that. John Mayer did that actually a little bit. Dave and Mayer show.
Yeah, it's
pretty cool.
It's crazy. I look at that in utter and complete awe.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't enjoy it as much in a sense because I love the interaction with other musicians.
Yeah, and then,
because
and then you're
locked
in. You don't
know what they're going to feed you.
Right.
And I like that sort of especially mystery of knowing I have to like be on my toes. Whereas I'll never be in a situation where I'm on, well, I might be on a situation where I'm on my own. It's different because it's my own head, you know, I'm interacting with. So I might surprise myself sometimes.
Yeah.
But less so, a lot less so.
If you're going to sit down and write a song on the piano, is there a certain genre or mood that you always go to? Like in my 3 months of piano lessons in the fifth grade.
So he knows a lot.
I went to, man, I would play the classicals that my piano teacher tried to teach me before I asked him to teach me the Jurassic Park theme song. To which he said, no, if you don't learn Farrelly's, I'm going to quit. To which I said, there's the door. No, I didn't say that. But I said, no, just teach me Jurassic Park theme song. My mom's paying you. I think like this is what we should do right now. And then he was like, nah, I'm good, and bounce. But I would always then, when I was at school and I would sit down at the piano, my, you know, probably 10-year-old over emotional self always felt like you're supposed to get dramatic and play like a love song, and I always thought about playing like a love song to a girl. So I'm curious, like for people that are actually good at piano, when you sit down, is it like, is your instinct to start like rocking out, or is it to kind of get like, you know, melancholy and sing
It's all dependent on your mood.
Yeah.
Right. Like.
Yeah.
I think that's like the aim is with an instrument is to make it like as easy as a language, your first language is, so you can just say whatever it is that you're feeling, but in notes.
That is the people I've seen do that. The aforementioned John Mayer, when he was on stage with Chappelle, like Chappelle just looks at him and asks for something, either a song or a mood or a thing. Like he would ask for an emotion one time, and then Mayer would play it, and you're like, because in your head you're like, what the hell is an angry guitar like melody? And then he'd play it. You're like, yeah, that's an angry guitar melody.
Yeah.
Like I can't say what that is, or I can't, you know, I can't describe that through music because that's not my world. But then John does it. And you're like, what? Like, so I guess my question to you is, are you ever sitting down and you're in like a certain mood, like either you're excited, you're depressed, you're something, and you go like, oh, I'm
now it's time.
Yeah. Now it's time. Like you go, oh, I'm in a mood right now. This could influence something.
Without the middle thought of this could influence something, it's almost like it's a natural inclination of when you're feeling something that you want to express it musically, at least.
Okay, so you don't have the thought of like, oh, I'm going to go to my therapy right now. You just go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're just like, let's see what happens here.
Not even see what, it just do it. Like, you know, if you guys are feeling some sort of way, it's going to come up on stage, whether you it or not, it's gonna come out.
Yeah,
and can't help it.
What if you're not near one of your instruments and you feel compelled?
I have my vocal box at all times.
Whoa.
Yeah, and have you ever done the thing where you get like a rhythm or a melody and you'll like leave yourself a voice, memo, or
so many. Like tens of thousands
of
voice memos.
Can you make an album with just those?
That would
No one's ever done that.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Can we hear one of them? No, they're not ready. That's like asking. It's like a comic. Can I hear your set last night?
Yeah.
It was just working out.
Yeah, your riff.
Hey, Brad.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something.
Fire away.
We're friends. Can we get personal?
Let's do it.
Do you have a foot fetish?
Absolutely not.
Let me finish.
Okay.
Do you have a sock fetish?
Absolutely yes.
Yeah. And we all love socks. We all wear them. But where do you get your socks?
Well, and that's where I have a problem. And I think we all have this problem. You have to go to the shoe store to get them, and then you get these socks that are made by t-shirt companies, not sock companies.
Crappy socks. There's still a place that has gotten socks right. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like the one that fits your foot, The one that makes it so that you want to enjoy the socks so much that you don't do what I do, which is lose the socks, and then you're mix matching colors and sizes.
And
I'm pretty sure I've worn one of your socks once.
I mean, yeah, that's why it only covered half your foot.
Yeah.
But if all that's making you go, well, Brad Adam, why are you talking so much about socks? Let me tell you what's going to solve all your sock problems.
What's that?
That's Bombas. B-O-M-B-A-S. Bombas.
It's a fun company to say.
Yeah, that's where you go to get comfortable socks made from super soft, natural cotton, and they are a sock company, Adam. This is what they do. They wake up thinking about feet. They go to bed thinking about feet.
Yeah, they have a foot fetish, but they want you to be comfortable. It's not weird. It's not sexual. They have different colors, patterns, lengths, styles.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, dude, having cool shoes is only half the battle. You want to have cool socks under those kicks.
You got to have a good sock game. And Bombas look great in the gym, at the office, when you're out of town. Every pair of socks comes with arch support, a seamless toe, and a cushioned footbed that is comfy but not too thick.
Dude, just imagine being at home, taking your shoes off in front of your family, and then being like, whoa, where did you get those? Or maybe you're trying to impress a girl.
Yeah.
And you're like, yo, why don't we give each other foot rubs? And she's like, I can't believe you just brought that up. I don't even know your name yet. We just sat down to dinner. But this seems like a fun idea to get to later. And when you do, and she sees your Bombas socks.
That's right.
I mean, what is she going
to
say?
I mean, she's going to say, let's get to rubbing those feet because I got to feel these comfy socks.
Yeah.
They are good. And they got socks for men. They got socks for women. They got socks for toddlers.
Wow.
I can only imagine parents out there with young kids. You can't leave because, you know, your kid will needs to be watched at all time. Just order your Bombas toddler socks online. They come right to your door. It's quick. It's easy. They're comfortable. You will not regret getting these socks.
If you want to get 20% off your first purchase, which, by the way, we have purchases coming.
Yes. I can't wait.
I cannot be more excited to get new socks because, again, I forget. Dude, I've bought socks from the airport before because I forgot socks.
Bad and it's move, like, man.
Dude, you just end up settling. And if you don't want to settle anymore and you want to make sure your feet are comfy and headed in the right direction, go to bombas.com/ALN. That's Bombas, BOMBAS.com/ALN for 20% off your first purchase.
And one thing that's great about this company is we're all about giving back.
Yeah.
Bombas, whenever you buy a pair of socks from Bombas, they will give a pair to someone in need. So you want to give to charity, you want to do the right thing, you want to sleep easy at night knowing that you've given back, it's real easy. Just go to Bombas, make any purchase, they will match your purchase and give whatever you got to someone who needs it.
Dude, they are given back by giving foot the way to be comfy. And that sounded better in my head. Giving back, giving foot. What I thought there was a fun body play on words there.
What does sound good is putting Bombas on your feet.
Good save.
That is for sure.
Go to bombas.com/ALN to get 20% off your first purchase. Bombas.com/ALN. And now back to the episode.
And have you ever had a moment, because I know there's the famous Keith Richards story where he got hammered, played the riff to Satisfaction on a tape recorder, fell asleep, woke up, was like, oh, my tape recorder is still going, didn't remember the riff at all, and just hit play and you hear dun 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 dun, and he's like, oh, that's pretty good. And then it was just like 3-4 hours of snoring.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there has to be a lot of heroin for that. Yeah.
But like, have you had a night out where like maybe, oh no, you said you don't drink, right?
Not really, no.
Okay. So you haven't had like
You still go out though, right?
I still go out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had those gyms where you like come back to something months later or days later and go, oh, well, I guess that's pretty good.
Yeah, because like often, I guess most of my ideas happen while I'm on the run. Driving, exercising, cleaning dishes. Like, it's usually when there's some sort of motion going on and you're like in this autopilot zone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you've gotten out of your own way.
Yeah.
And yet you're still receiving.
Mm-hmm.
And so in those moments, I might not actually have time to go and like work it all out and
sure.
write a whole song. So yeah, there's so many times I've just recorded something and then gone back later and and made something more out of it. And there's so many more times that I've never gone back to the fucking idea.
Oh, no. We,
right? Because in the moment,
we can count so many times when we've gone back to notes and be like, What the hell is peanut butter volleyball?
What is that?
It's why a new
is
sport?
Why did I think that was funny? Yeah. Why? There's no need. We went through that list and we just kind of stopped at Eric Clapton.
You know what? I sometimes have to do on the notes now to like I have to write where I am and what triggered the thought.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
Because so, if it's only a segment of a lyric, sometimes it can be abstract. But as soon as I remember the context, I'm like, oh, that's what gets me back to that.
That's zone. Really smart.
Yeah.
What was connecting you to it, right?
Yeah.
Man, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because then that kind of brings you back to that moment. And goes, oh, yeah, that's what I was feeling when I wrote.
Yeah. Yesterday.
Yeah.
So you truly didn't want to listen. And how about now? Do you listen to other, you know, types of music or musicians, artists, just to kind of hear what's out there, or do you just not want to be influenced by
anything? It's more the latter, but more so not just because I don't want to be influenced, but because when I listen to music, it's very natural for me to get analytical with it,
right?
And mm-hmm. it's like work, whereas when I go and watch comedy, mm-hmm. I can just completely zone out and laugh and not think about how that relates to. I mean, it does, as I said, like influence me, but it doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm. You can just sit there and enjoy it.
Yeah,
yeah. There's always times when I'm going to a concert and I'm watching like I watched a band one time like bring out a fire extinguisher, but it had like a gasoline muzzle on the end of it, and he started like spraying the audience with it. And I was like, oh, I could do something like that during my show. I'm like, wait, no, I can't. No, I can't. That doesn't work. I'm not gonna do that. Like, there's so many times when I think I'm inspired by something that someone on stage is doing, and where I go, no, wait, but that's them. That's what they do. I don't do that.
It's the energy above anything, though, that I get influenced by. Like, just watching someone so present,
yeah,
it just fires me up.
And I think it's valuable for artists to go to shows. You know, they don't have to be necessarily in your field, but it's valuable to go and know what it's like to be an audience member. Experience that and go like, oh, this is what they're looking at.
Yeah.
This is how they're feeling. This is why they're distracted by the woman that's bringing their mozzarella sticks right now. Like, oh, this is what that feeling is. And then you can kind of address those feelings better in your own onstage act.
Hmm. Interesting.
We have to hear some Prince stories. Like, because Prince is...
Do we?
I think we do.
Of course we do.
Yeah.
I don't have many stories.
I mean, but you've spent more time with him than we have.
I guess. I don't know. It's weird when someone passes away to you just sort of like, you want to let their legacy do the talking.
Sure.
Yeah. You know? You certainly can with Prince.
Were you a fan before you...
I didn't know his music before I worked with him.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
I'd heard a couple of the popular songs, but mm-hmm. again, it happened very quickly out of nowhere.
Yeah.
He saw me on TV playing with Jeff Beck, and then started YouTubing me, and then like got my number from a drummer, and then called me, and his first question was, "Do you like the drum rolls of Jack DeJohnette?" And I was like, well, of course I do. Well, we're going to be friends.
Click? Or was that...
That was it.
Did he hang up?
That was the only conversation. And then 3 minutes later, he was at your front door. You're like, how were you?
What I really admired about him was that he was such a fan. Like, I remember going over to his place quite a few times and like...
Paisley Park or...
In L.A. I went to Paisley Park... too.
Okay.
But like he had a spot here and like mm-hmm. we like one time we just got in a limo and just sat in the back and listened to other people's recordings. Like, and he was like, so what do you think of this?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? And we're just talk like I would with any other musician.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
And like those moments, are you like, are you starstruck? Are you just like, just keep it together? Are you not aware of that? Are you like you say, are you just two musicians hanging out,
that's
listening
what
to music?
I haven't really gotten starstruck,
mm-hmm.
but I've been like insanely inspired by people, and more so who they are as a person than mm-hmm. their musicianship.
Hmm.
You know, like Leonard Cohen.
Oh, geez,
man.
He was probably one of the most inspiring humans I've ever met. Like,
didn't he do Walking on Memphis?
He did. I know he did Hallelujah.
No,
he wrote that one.
Yeah,
I know he did that. Yeah. He didn't do Walking in Memphis.
I will look it up.
Remember walking in Memphis, walking with my 3-back beat on the green. You know?
No.
Okay, you know what?
That's not
you
him.
Guys are looking at me like
you're
I don't.
Singing it like Bruce Springsteen. So I wonder.
Wait, when did you work with him?
When did I work with Leonard
Cohen? Yeah,
I didn't work with him. We were friendly.
Mark Cohen, not Leonard Cohen.
When I was walking in Memphis. Wish Leonard Cohen did it. Name that Cohen.
Wrong Cohen.
You're friendly with him. CBS. So hadn't, yeah.
Yeah, just he and he's one of my favorite lyricists ever.
Damn.
So, but just as a human, because like he spent so much time in the monastery and like working on his spiritual life and just that's so inspiring. And there's like a lot of musicians that I've met who they're such great humans. Jackson Browne is another one that like he's like he actually executive produced this album I just made.
Yes.
And he sort of has been like there every step of the way for me. Like just I see him mentoring all these younger musicians, like giving people guitars and advice and his time and that kind of stuff. Like as you guys know too, it's like not everyone in the industry is like that.
No.
Yeah. When you meet people like that, you're like, oh. Like Bill Burr.
Yeah.
He like really takes the time.
Yeah.
Like to mentor people. Yeah. And like, that's the coolest.
It's unheard of at his level and with what he's got going on.
Yeah.
And, time is valuable to him.
Yeah. Know? And you see it reflected in his shows because if you look at the people that he has opening for him, often like it's a great show start to finish. They're like he gets great comics too, because some comics are really intimidated. They're like, oh, I want someone kind of shitty to open up for me. Like he's like, no, I want beasts to open up for me.
Yeah,
bring it. And then if they want to join me on stage later and play drums, awesome. Like now were you able to like sit down off mic with him and just kind of jam out?
Me and Bill, yeah, we've done it like many times. Yeah.
And Maren too, right?
Huh?
Maren too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I produced a track for Maren on this movie that just came out.
No way. Called what?
It's called, what is it called? Sword of Trust.
Nice.
It's like the song, because he's like a guitarist in the movie. And then at the end, we did this song that he plays at the very, like when the end credits come up.
Holy shit.
So I like produced that here and then, yeah.
Maren seems like he's I mean, I guess I always judge to someone's musical skills, like with the for a comedian, you know what I'm saying? But
he
seems, I mean, can you separate those two? Or when you saw him play, were you like, yeah, for a comic, you're.
No, I take the comic out. I think, like.
if they're good enough, you take it away, yeah?
Well, if you have like a good aesthetic, then you have good aesthetic. I don't think it stops at your art form.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think that. I mean, as long as you put in the hours to develop the vocabulary.
Right.
It's all just about vocabulary. Once you have vocabulary, then it's all about your aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And so no matter what, if I did comedy or this or that, it's like, so what's your taste like?
Yeah.
That's what you're going to, you know.
What, when you're waking up in the morning and you got your Amazon Echo next to you, what do you tell Alexa to play?
I stay so far away from that show.
Well, what's on your playlist in
I love in Indian general? Classical music. I love listening.
Indian classical music.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Adam was telling me about Indian classical music.
Yeah.
The other, no, he wasn't.
Love it. What does that sound like?
Sounds like...
Does it sound like, when I was walking in Memphis?
Sounds like Mark Cohen.
How do you get into Indian classical?
Well, I've been meditating since I was a teenager.
Okay.
And like there's a big like Indian classical music is one of the few music that I guess not only is like extremely intellectually satisfying and challenging, but like there's also like there's a spiritual aspect. Like they play different ragas for different times of day, and there's this whole it's really inspiring. Like when I listen to it, I'm inspired on all levels.
What's a raga? Because I just typed in Indian classical music and it said healing ragas. Like,
yeah, there's different, like you can do it for different times of day. It's the pattern that repeats that you sort of How do you even describe a raga?
I don't know.
Alexa, describe a raga.
Exactly.
Will not stump her. Oh yeah, this is meditation music for sure.
This is Indian classical healing ragas. And a bunch of words I don't know, so I'm not going to try to say them because they'll probably come out like I'm being insensitive.
Rhythmically too, it can get super advanced. Like they're playing in all kinds of odd time signatures and like lots of polyrhythms.
Yeah,
it's deep.
And then
is that a pan flute? What's the
sitar? No, not this right now. But
what is that?
I.
That's not the recorder, is it? I played that in the fourth grade.
Yeah.
I knew I should have stuck with it.
Yeah, it's a recorder.
Could have made money off meditation music.
Could be like an Indian classical.
Played the ragu.
Yeah.
The ragu.
What is it?
Raga.
Yeah.
Ragu's a tomato sauce.
All right. Fuck you.
There, that's the sitar.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever tried to play a sitar?
I actually, I went to Ravi Shankar's house.
What? Whoa. That is literally the only sitar player that I know. And that, so I'm just like, he's like the dude.
Yeah.
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 He's like the guy.
Yeah. Even I knew who that is.
Wow.
So I tried to. Those are hard instruments.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, no, I haven't. I think I've played on some tablas for a second.
Is there any sitar on your album Love Remains?
Actually, there is a Indian classical violinist on Under the Sun.
Dang.
Yeah.
Is that the first track? No.
I don't know what number it is. Maybe it's like 7.
By the way, thanks for saying it to us. Holy shit. I don't know where you produced that or arrange. I mean, I have so many questions. It's fucking incredible.
Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard you and seen you play, but like, man, like a full album thing. That's a big, like, that's, it's legit.
I mean, it's not as good as my performances at the goddamn Comedy Jam.
Well, this is true. And you didn't let me finish. Yes. Yeah. Man, how long of a, and by the way, it's available for everywhere for people to get. Yeah.
Yeah. Wherever.
Love Remains, right? Spotify, Amazon.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Is there a place that you like to direct people to that's easier or just wherever you get your music, right?
Yeah.
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 We don't get paid anyway, so just
listen to it, enjoy it, but then most importantly, come see you live. I watched a video.
You can just send me money directly on your PayPal Venmo account. It's just PayPal/TalWilkinson.
There you go.
Yeah, I listened to the album. It was fantastic. I think my favorite was, I mentioned it earlier, was the song Killing Me.
Oh, cool.
I love that song.
Yeah, really
very
good track.
Very, there's one lyric in there. It was like, I don't want to be
I want to be held, but not beholden.
Yes.
Where does that come from?
I want to be held, but what? Yeah, sorry. That one lyric, I was just,
makes you go, I could never do this, right?
Yes. Like, that's and my, I was kind of casually listening to it, but then I heard that lyric, and I was like, whoa. And I went back, and I listen to it again. Like, sorry to make you dissect one lyric in your great album, but I don't know.
It's kind of a guy's thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
That one really spoke to me, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think as like an independent artist, like, mm-hmm. we all want to like experience love, but not be tied down by it. So
yeah. Yeah, it was very, like, I don't know if I would say that, like, the lyrics, because I re-listened to the song after I heard that lyric, and it seemed, as I was diving into it, it seemed like, sort of like, nah, I don't want to say it's a feminist song, but it's very pro-woman, I felt.
That's interesting. Because, like I just said, it's like, it's a man's thought, like, I mean,
yeah,
in that, like, I find that more of my male friends are, mm-hmm. are experiencing those kinds of feelings, but, you know, I think that anybody that's an artist or, I mean, mm-hmm. well, there's a lot of people that just, I guess, feel that way.
Yeah.
But
it was, yeah, that song really spoke to me, and then I looked up a video of you playing it live, and when you do, like, one thing I'll say about when you play live is that there's a lot of people that when they play live, I don't know what the singer is saying.
Mm-hmm.
I hear...
Lyrically, you mean...
Yes. I can't understand them, or the sound guy is fucking up. I don't know what's happening.
Maybe the emotion is driving what's something, happening instead of being able to articulate.
But like you, everything was clear. The bass was clear. Your lyrics, clear. Mm-hmm. Like everything. I got to experience
everything in your live performance, and I really respected that.
That's cool. I mean, I think the priority for me is storytelling.
There you go.
Another reason why.
Yeah,
what love comedians. Yeah.
Because there, you know, it's become almost fashionable with all these popular TV shows to just to be a singer, mm-hmm. like who can sing all these notes. But right. it's less about like storytelling.
Yeah,
and I really all my favorite artists from Dylan to Leonard Cohen to Paul Simon to you know Lightning Hopkins, like all the old blues guys, like they're all like telling stories. They're not thinking about singing. You know?
Right. And I would say that, yeah, the story and storytelling is, I would say, the most important part, because that's the
it
part.
Is.
That's
is
the part.
Is the reason you're picking up the instrument? Why else are you opening your mouth then?
Yeah.
You're going to tell a story.
That's the part that will make you feel something, is the story that's told in the song, the story that's told in the joke.
And then on the other hand, you can go and listen to some instrumental music and they're telling stories with notes too. So mm-hmm. there's a way to tell stories in you know in another way as well.
How do you come up with the title Love Remains?
I just love that it means two opposing things almost. Love remains, like mm-hmm. love continues, mm-hmm. and love remains like the remnants of a failed love.
Like human remains, love remains.
Yeah, the remains. Yeah. And that's sort of like what happens when you enter and then leave a relationship is mm-hmm. is that there's this remnant of this failed love and yet love remains.
Mm. See, and that's why you're a lyricist.
Yeah.
And we tell dick jokes.
Because our version of that would have been like, because like when you fucking break up, there's like this shitty time where you like go to the, you like Jack in the Box and you're like,
you're crying.
I left my fucking fries. So you go back and you're like, it remained to be seen if they were still open. I knew they were 24 hours, but I loved it, so.
And then that's why I jacked in the box.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
Even still spun it.
Yeah.
Still spun.
Hey,
you managed to make a sad, depressing breakup story from a dude into a beautiful title for a song.
And
that's why I jacked in the box.
If we had mics to bump you with, we would definitely be bumping the mic on that comment right there.
Just have Justin Timberlake do jacked in a box instead of dick in a box.
By the way, if Jack in the Box truly had a dick and truly had some balls to go with that dick and wanted to take some chances, that would be their next commercial.
Yeah.
Jack in the Box. I mean, because Jack in the Box isn't, that's the one where they get a little, you know, they're feeding stoners with their advertising.
They are.
But they also love play on words and euphemisms, kind of. They're the only one that I feel like is kind of like leaning into like, you know what this means.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, because, their late night menu thing was called the Munchie Box.
Yeah.
So,
But even Jack was like, don't you guys love my new chicken ball? Like, he's like, I love your balls.
Yeah,
was it? It was
Bowls. Yeah, because he had like teriyaki bowls or something.
I love your teriyaki. I love your bowls. They're so good. They're so tasty, Jack. He's like, everybody loves my bowls. Kids, wives, stepdads. You're like, Jesus, dude.
It was very SNL sweaty balls.
Yeah.
I
have a I have a guitar, a Martin downstairs, a black one.
You do?
Because, you know, I still play.
Do we get to hear a song?
I will play something small if you will play something from your album or anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah?
Deal?
All right. Brett, keep her chatting.
All right. We'll do a quick word association while he gets the guitar. Just one or two sentences, because I'm going to say some other people that you worked with. Sting.
Ouch.
Ouch.
Were we doing word association?
Oh, no, but like the artist, like how'd you like him as a person? And so I was like, ouch, what did he do to you? Damn Sting and your tantric sex.
That's not word association. You just want the gossip.
Yeah. Well, no, not really the gossip, just your thoughts on them as either artists or people or both.
I mean, I don't know him well enough. Like, amazing musician. And I'm just going to say the same about everyone here.
Mick Jagger.
He's really smart, like incredibly smart and funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe not at telling stories on stage, but just very quick.
Yeah.
Witty.
Steven Tyler.
Super fun and like just warm with everyone and very inclusive and Yeah, just like he's come to like a couple of my parties and just like jammed and
no kidding,
just like so fun.
Wow. And then how do you pass time when you're on the road?
I really don't ever have any time off.
Well, there you go.
It's a problem.
It is.
It really is a problem.
Well, start listening to some Indian classical and chill out. Adam,
wait, you don't have like, because I'm curious about that too, being on the road. Like, you don't go out to see movies or do like late night diner meals.
There are like 16 hour days every day. I mean, I wish I had 2 more hours to sleep. Mm-hmm.
I hear you. Adam has his guitar.
Well, if you're having trouble falling asleep, maybe think of the soothing sounds
of this.
I mean, all right, let's see. So, let's see, probably about 6 years ago. And let me just preface this with, I'm not great, which is the name of this song. No, this was a song I wrote a long time ago about when I was in elementary school, you know, recess. Did you ever have recess?
Yeah.
In school?
It was always too short.
Especially
15 minutes.
Yeah. 15 minutes in Australia?
Yeah.
That is just, yeah, that is not
the... It's a tease. I'd rather not have
recess.
It's
a big dick tease.
Because then you're always late.
You go out, you get one game of tetherball, maybe... you know, a chance to get one basket in a game of 3-on-3, maybe get up in kickball, and then the whistle blows, and then you always try to roll the dice and play longer, and then the recess teacher has to turn to a Nazi, and they're like, if you don't go inside, I'm going to tell your parents. And you're like, you don't know my parents, they split up. And then she's like, fucking way to make it weird. And then you go back inside. Anyway, this song is about the kid Dustin Brody, who was on my on the playground, and he was always way too competitive, so we called him a over-competitive recess kid. Competitive recess kid, why don't you cool the fuck down? Everyone's trying to have a good time. And that's all I remember of the song. I wrote this about 5 years ago.
But the next song I wrote, I think we got the you know,
got the gist of it.
Yeah,
yeah.
You want more?
He was very over competitive, and he was a recess kid.
What is I'm trying to think of a
I don't know. I don't know what songs you've written.
I wrote one about fuck. Well, while I'm thinking of this, by the way, again, this is why we don't get opportunities.
Yeah.
To perform on the big stages. What song will you be singing for us?
I don't know. You didn't tell me I was going to be singing a song. Now I have to write one and then write it down and. Give me just an hour.
Okay.
Well, no,
we're chilling.
No,
well, let me perform the rest of this unplugged set.
You could, no, you could play something from the album if you want, or just something you're working on.
Yeah. Let me see if I have a guitar pick with all this fucking cash I brought. So I have to pay these guys to have me on their podcast.
So. Sure. Well, this is the big time right here.
Do I even have a pick? I don't think I do. This is the musician's wallet.
Do you need one? I can find.
She's literally throwing money at us.
I'm crushing it, dude.
Apparently.
Over competitive recess kid.
I don't have a pick. Do you have a pick?
I think I might, yeah. Would that help a lot?
A minor amount. It won't make me sound good. Oh, look, I found this is a bass pick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like it's a wooden pick.
Whoa.
Check it out, dude.
Got some heft.
Dang. Brad, you want to feel what a bass pick feels like? Want to feel my bass pick?
I mean, not like I haven't already. There were some times in college. We don't really talk about those. All right. Well, here.
Oh, is that one?
Is it?
I don't know. I just got to get past the tampons and the...
I've had a dime for every time I said that.
All the time.
Oh, there it is.
Got one.
All right.
Found one?
I found it.
Oh, just when I was
finding my money back.
Just when I was finding my groove. I was hoping to be a roadie. How's this? Good.
Right there. fucking move.
Yeah.
You say you love me, you say that you care. Can't live without me, desert me, you wouldn't dare. On our first exchange, you saw all the right signs and filled in the blanks with imaginary lines. But now all my colors are here to see. You only many hours, I stay up all night, strum my guitar in the middle of a fight. Then I leave town for months on end to play in a band. Things you said you loved about me, getting hard for you to stand.
Get the album. If that doesn't sell it, I don't know what the
holy
fuck can
shit.
This will sell it. Hold on, one more song.
Yeah.
Yeah. My uncle.
I'm down, dude. I mean,
just want to see how long you'll hold that for, really.
The album.
Mean, quite honestly, yeah. You play. I would do that for a whole show. You're unbelievable. Yeah.
The album is Love Remains. Tal Wolkenfeld.
Holy shit!
Amazing.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah.
Love Remains, go get the album and Tal.com. Where do people go get tour dates?
I wish it was Tal.com. Mm. TalWilkenfeld.com.
Easy.
And I'm playing, I guess, Kimmel on Monday.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Portland, Seattle later in the week.
We're in Seattle. That's where I'm from.
Where am I playing in Seattle? I actually
look
don't
it up.
Know.
Go to the website.
Yeah.
Look it up. You have a phone in your damn pocket that you're listening to this podcast on. Go see her, but only if you like things that are awesome, and only if you like feeling things.
Will you take us out?
I don't have the heart. nothing to cover the emptiness I feel. I thought this was what I wanted, but I keep trying to tear it down. I ride down the back to hide that I don't want to want you. A habit that I've come to despise. When I start yearning, like I yearn for you tonight.
Good night, everybody. Next time she'll cover Over Competitive Recess Kid.
I got my Jack in the Box.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
Meh, what's up, dog? This is your pal Bugs Bunny. Say, I got a question for you. Do you know who has the head of Elmer Fudd and the body of Foghorn Leghorn? Why, that's Adam Ray and Brad Williams. Ain't I a stinker?